fire is a cool t-shirt. Take a seat on my sofa. Baby, we got bills to pay. That won't make you happy. You ain't no celebrity, honey. 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 You ain't no celebrity, honey.
Welcome, dear listeners. You're listening to We're Goblins with your best hosts ever, Hina and Tasha.
Oh, I like that we're best hosts now. I think our description should change weekly.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm trying to do, okay, subtly. I like this. You're welcome.
Best hosts ever, Hina and Tasha, come to you to talk about words and their impact on culture.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
You got the gist
okay.
of it.
I was like, wait, it's been a little while.
Buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet.
Yep.
Just all the best things in the world. And your friendly and hostile neighborhood goblins. This is CADR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkaminim speaking Musqueam people. It's been a hot minute, and I'm excited for this episode.
Yeah, me too. I'm a little rusty. CITR just finished up the last day of Shindig, and we came in a little worse for wear this morning. I had like watery eye syndrome. I don't know if anyone has ever experienced that, where like everything in the world causes your eyes to water, and you're not crying. It's not crying. It's just
sensitive. I think you're crying.
It's just being sensitive. So I'm going to be really sensitive today.
I'm just a delicate little flower.
I am but a girl.
But with that, you're still here.
Yes.
Best host ever.
Yep, that's
and
me.
And best co-host ever.
Coming to you with part two of our small series on fandom, stans, cult, culture in general, and the language that surrounds it.
Yeah, so if you were tuned in, and I don't blame you if you weren't, this was almost a week, it was almost a month ago. Life just got in the way, as it does, and we talked about celebrity culture, the transformation of fan culture, how it started as something, how it was a pejorative, the word stan, and then it has shifted to meaning something more exciting and fun and innocuous. And here we are talking about cults, which just our personal favorite topic ever.
It is true. I think it's no secret to anyone, at least here that I work with, that I'm obsessed with cult documentaries, mm-hmm. cult books,
podcasts,
stories about any sort of like coercive group, I guess you could say. There's like that human element of those stories where you are so interested to know how or why someone would, like, what would motivate a person to join such a thing.
Mm.
I think that's the most interesting question about cults generally, not the question of, like, is this or isn't this a cult? Because, like, often it is.
Sure.
But what motivates a person's behavior to join one or to start one? I think that's probably the most interesting part.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you... So, you know, we always have a monologue going in our head when we're watching TV.
Unfortunately.
Right? And... often, people, I imagine, watching cult documentaries or listening to shows about scams and whatnot are like, I would never fall for this.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on through your mind?
Okay, the way my brain works is normally if there is a popular opinion about something, such as the, like, I would never fall for this, my brain always goes, what if? And so... the first imperative when I watch a cult documentary or something is the thought, you know, like, oh, I'm too smart for this. So immediately I think, oh, but what if, like, what if I am susceptible? How would I, what are the ways in which I don't know that I'm susceptible? Like, what is my particular weakness?
Hmm.
I know I have one and I'm probably likely to be coerced into something. I just don't know what my imperative is.
Hmm.
So that's where I go, just because I don't know why, like, for better or worse, I will always challenge my, like, default way of thinking. They can lead to some interesting routes. It could also just make me really stupid in a lot of scenarios.
Contrarian.
Yeah, like, we like to say casually we're haters. I think it also means that we just question things. Like, default, we just need to know why.
Yeah, are we haters or are we just deeply critical thinking?
Are we just
beings?
Deep? are we haters or are we really deep?
I think it's the latter.
It obviously is.
Let's
the
be
latter.
Real.
Yeah.
Come on, we can say it.
I just think about things too much.
Yeah. I just feel too deeply, actually.
Well, what do you think when you're watching something about cults? Like,
so, yeah. So the question of, or the statement, I would never fall for this, is mm-hmm. just not interesting to me at all.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
I feel like what I'm curious and mortified. Those are my two states. and we'll get more into this. Specifically to watching cult docs. Perhaps also for a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Being curious and mortified. Recently, I watched Escaping Twin Flame Universe, which Tasha and I will get more into it, on Netflix. And again, curious and mortified.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't so much, oh, these people are dumb, I would never fall for this. Because, yeah, there are moments where it's like, oh my God, you've really fallen to the deep end. But for me, it's more like all seeing how powerful the manipulation is and how, like, what are the things that are working and how horrifying that is, that this is kind of the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also second what you said, the points of weakness of, like, in a moment of weakness, perhaps I could fall for something like that as well. And the cult gurus are not dummies. I mean, they know how to pray. They're not preying on you and me. They know who to pray on, how to pray, when to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very calculated. And
yeah.
So it's not... cults by design exist on the fringes. They are demonized, rightly so, but also... sometimes maybe we do a disservice by the way we talk about cults, like demonizing the victims who are victims.
Yeah.
And vilifying them. But also cults are something that are, again, alternative, not favorable, and perhaps people who fall for these things are seen as weirdos and stuff. But I think they work for several different reasons.
Yeah, and I think generally in the way in which we see cults these days, they prey upon people in moments of weakness. So the thought process that is like, oh, I would never slash I could never, perhaps right now you are not a moment in your life where you are more susceptible to this kind of thing. And I mean, specifically use the word manipulate, which I think is a much better word than the one that people often use, which is brainwashing. Like, brainwashing is straight up a metaphor. Simply put, you can't actually brainwash someone into thinking something they don't already believe or aren't like ready to believe. So it's really just a matter of people being preyed upon in moments of weakness, perhaps about things that are being like systemically crushing to them. Like, it is never really just about whether or not you can be brainwashed into something or convinced into something. Mm-hmm. There's always a lot more going on. And if that is not affecting you currently, great. But, you know, maybe what we're saying is like, have a bit of empathy and also ask the more interesting question.
Yeah.
Which is what would motivate a person to participate in it. And also what is going on in the cult group itself that could lead to causing people to want to join. You know, there's always something larger happening.
Yeah. I also, maybe this is a bit of a stretch, but then I'm thinking about if you are somewhat in a stable place in your life, you have community, good relationship with your family, you have friends, stable job, very unlikely that you're going to be susceptible to joining a cult, versus thinking of like social determinants of health, like you're impoverished or have several different marginalized identities, have mental illnesses or lonely, way more likely to fall for a cult. And no one is like, oh, I am really sad, I'm going to go join a cult. Cults are nefarious and so sneaky by definition, that we hear so often folks who have been part of a cult and come out of it are like, oh, God, I didn't know I was part of a cult.
Yeah.
And they're really essentially just looking for community. And so perhaps they have tried other things, other ways of forming connection, and it did not work, that they're to seek out these kind of more deviant groups that are accepting them, but then of course it comes at a big cost.
Yeah. And I think also it's important to note how much the word cult itself has found its way into modern culture and just modern discourse in general. Like, everything is described really almost like tongue-in-cheek as a cult. Like, I'm thinking of like beauty magazine headlines being like, oh, this cult favorite lipstick, or even just cult classics as in movies.
Yeah.
The word cult has been kind of tossed around lately, and obviously we're doing this as a follow-up to an episode about fandoms, so as to suggest that there's a through line from like fandoms, stan cultures, to cults, which I think is real. I think the word cult had a much more sinister connotation maybe some like 20, 30 years ago when we didn't have, you know, globalized internet connecting us and finding and it creating new ways for people to gather amongst the banner of certain things. So now we just have way more things that we can call cults in a less severe way, if that makes sense. Like the cult of being a Swiftie, or the cult of like being a Glossier girl, or you know, there are just so many ways in which this word is used. And
yeah, yeah, that's something you and I, Tasha, come up against all the time. Language gets popularized, right? Like, first, it's out of box, an outlier, and those terms. I mean, again, with whole fandom culture, that's how it started initially. And sure, it's cool when things are accessible and we're able to joke about things. But then, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I feel a bit of cognitive dissonance with cult, because dangerous groups still exist.
Mm-hmm.
Nefarious cults exist, which ruin people's lives, are abusive in very many different ways. And so maybe sometimes because it's been so overused, they're like lipstick having a cult following, make it make sense. I'm like, I don't
know. Startups as cults. Like, yeah. We're at this point where like from Jonestown as a cult to like a startup as a cult. And it feels, I mean, it is a huge spectrum.
And it's really odd.
Yeah. But language change is indicative of social change. So there is clearly something happening here that has caused us to use this really severe word in these less severe scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to what the entire spectrum of the word cult is, but I do know that it is being used to describe things that are less serious, though can be severe, such as the Twin Flames documentary that we have both consumed.
Binged,
destroyed.
Please, yeah. Ate it up.
Metabolized. I metabolized it. It has become part of me.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
So, tell me. I know you have watched the Netflix documentary and the Prime documentary.
Yeah, I have, because the second I saw it, I was like, oh my goodness, this was devised in a lab for me specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is it? How would you define Twin Flame Universe?
Okay, so Twin Flame Universe, for those who haven't fully metabolized it as part of their biology at this point, it refers to what I think started off as a Facebook group that's promise under the wings, I guess, of these two sort of like with self-proclaimed gurus that were saying that they could help you connect with the person who is your twin flame, the person that you were supposedly meant to be with. I think there is like other instances of the term twin flame being used. It's probably appropriative. It very much has the vibe of being appropriative, but has always been used to describe like monogamous heterosexual pairing of some kind that was meant to be your soulmate,
mm-hmm.
Your destined person. And so people that are experiencing heartbreak or loneliness and they're attributing it to one person who they want to be with were promised in this group that, you know, if they follow these steps, they will be reunited with their twin flame because it was meant to be. It's sort of like essentialism that undergrids the whole thing. That is, you know, the idea that things are as they are, and then you're born into them and they always will be that way. So the soulmate ideal is kind of this like set in stone thing, which is always a problem and always not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this specific group, though. Throughout the documentary, there are many attempts to define it as a cult and a lot of ways in which the participants and obviously the leaders, if you can even say leaders, it's probably a cult, but will refute this and say it is decidedly not a cult. But we are at a place in culture where the word cult is used to describe liking a movie. So
mm-hmm.
I think it very much is. And there are other sinister things that happened in it. I don't know if you want to give your overview of the worst parts.
Oof. Just everything. Twin Flame Universe. Yeah. One of the things that I just I recall right now, they had, it's quote unquote a pseudo university. So they offer classes there. It's called Twin Flame Ascension School. And this is like pre-Zoom era where they're doing Facebook Lives. And it's sort of like quasi playing a therapist and half playing a mystic. And so the couple who are the cult leaders, they're called Jeff and Shayla or something. And she fully changed her name and has this weird pronunciation to this new name, Shayla, Sheila. I don't know.
Important fact.
Yeah. To sound, and they do come in to sound more exotic or something.
Absolutely.
And it's this, again, playing sort of, yeah, this quasi-spiritual guru. And folks, initially it starts very much as MLM. So you can subscribe to classes, they're expensive, and then you can become a coach. And there is a scalable business model situation going on. If you do better, if you're devoted enough, you can become a junior coach and then be trained specifically within the two, within the couple who are hella problematic, but as are put on a pedestal and is seen as the epitome of, like, this is what we're selling you, mm-hmm. basically selling you ourselves initially and ultimately. And then the whole thing with how all cults have underlying religious tones, right? So it's very much like, oh, I'm getting a calling from God that this is your twin flame or this isn't your twin flame. And then they have this really messed up idea of how there is a spiritual masculine and then a spiritual feminine, which, like, sure, those things can exist in one person, but it's like, no, there are two people. One is masculine, one is feminine, and then it doesn't matter what your gender is or what gender you identify with. So they're fully straight up straight people who are coerced into changing their gender, which is really wild. And something that stood out to me is there is this person in the documentary. They are a professor at some university, and they do they study gender and talk about trans rights and stuff. And they point this as being such a setback for actual, again, trans rights, because this can be seen as like, oh, this is what trans people are like, or this is what trans community is like, coercing people, which mm-hmm. is. Farther, it could not be further from the truth. Yeah,
the problem with that is, like, it's this form of determinism. It takes away anyone's, like, right to decide what gender they feel suits them, mm-hmm. what sexuality they feel suits them. It takes away choice in any way, because these spiritual leaders have decided that for you. It's the same thing as biological determinism. It's saying that something has decided for you, your gender, and that is what is going to happen, which is a huge setback. Mm-hmm. But it is almost like the perfect 2023 cult, because it has this air of being like
progressive.
Mm-hmm. They seem to be like pro-trans rights,
yeah.
And they seem, yeah, they appear to be all these things that they are not, because there is just, like, a lot of coercion going on.
Absolutely. I think of, so, yeah, very basic what I'm going to say right now. Anything extreme is bad, right?
Yeah.
Just like, don't force a trans person to be cis. You can't force a cis person to be trans.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, my dude, that does not make you progressive. Like, there is no agency. The folks who are part of this universe, I can't remember if they had, like, a name or a badge, but they are infantilized, and it's mostly women, which, again, is very common, something we've seen with many cults.
Mm-hmm.
Who are preyed upon and have spent years and years getting deeper and deeper into this quote-unquote universe, and find it hard to leave, are, have cut ties from their family, courtesy the cult leaders telling them that their families don't want what's best for them, or their families are toxic. That's not the energy they should have in their lives. And also, their families are fully impeding
mm-hmm.
in their process of connecting with their twin flame.
Yeah, and then the other element of this too is there is a coercive nature to, like, telling people that they're in control of how someone else feels about them. Which is the whole part of their ethos, right? Is, yeah. you know, I would imagine that one stumbles upon this because they are heartbroken. And, like, whom among us has not been sad and heartbroken. So this is not one of those like, oh, it would never happen to me. Because I think
played
this
my
just...
Chemical Romance on repeat. Come on.
This is just, you know, your poor little emo heart has brought you here.
Very valid.
And they're promising that it will work out if you just tried hard enough or worked hard enough, which is another form of implementing a meritocracy to something as hard to pin down as relationships and love. Like, it's not about working hard enough. Usually you can't put in that same, like, it's not an equation, but it's being treated as if it were as simple as an equation and as simple as being all in your control.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is something that a lot of cults do employ, or at least a lot of modern day cults, is they ride in on the wave of the meritocracy with this idea that things that are not working out in your life can work out if you had the right attitude, or if you hustled hard enough, mm-hmm. or if you did, in this case, the mirror exercise, which they would tell their participants to...
Don't get me started.
Whatever was happening, if the person that they wanted to be with was ignoring them, they would say, try the mirror exercise, which would mean you would then flip it to be about yourself. You'd be like, I am ignoring me. And then you would supposedly have to go on this introspective journey of some kind and decide why you're ignoring you, and that is the reason why your, like, your crush is ignoring you, essentially.
Yeah.
It makes it your problem. It exalts the victors, and it makes anyone who has not achieved that, like, directly responsible for their achievements, mm-hmm. which is not the case in relationships at all.
Yeah. No, what was interesting, and this is where it gets tricky, is that, yes, I'm all for people being responsible / being held responsible for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
We should hold ourselves and others accountable. And we do have some agency and some degree of control, sure. But having said that, sometimes life just really sucks and there's really nothing you can do about it. And it sounds defeatist, but that's how it is. And the mirror exercise, which you just touched upon, was so scary to witness folks being manipulated into doing that and almost put into 24 hours of, like, quote-unquote therapeutic blocks where they would just be in this vicious cycle and really lose touch with reality. It's very delusional, but it also really breaks your spirit. Ultimately, that's what cults want to do, and this is how they can maintain their power over you and also across the group. And one person specifically, I remember, they were told that one of their coworkers that they sort of were into... No, this was another person I'm thinking of. So this one person who got broken up with and was really heartbroken about it, makes sense. They were told by, again, the cult couple that that person is their twin flame. No, they broke up with you, it's over. And they were made to be so aggressive. So the woman, they basically pushed her into so much aggression that the man who broke up with her got a restraining order against her. And so, yeah, it was wild.
Yeah, this idea that you're in control of your entire shit that would force someone to levels of extreme behavior that wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah.
The thing is like, you are in control up until a certain point and then you're not.
You're
like,
not.
That's just, at least to me, that's, I think, being able to let go at a certain point mm-hmm. is a truism. I mean, I could be wrong, but I really don't think that anyone is that much in control.
No, I think you're wise when you start realizing that sometimes we don't have that much control.
Mm-hmm.
And what was crazy to witness is that this whole philosophy being, again, A, parodied at these people, but also they... okay, I lost my thought. But, oh, it's really overriding other people's agency and other people's feelings and what the other person wants out of this. It's like, oh, you're going to go chase what you want. And it's ultimately really selfish and a bit of psychotic behavior.
Yeah, it is incredibly selfish. It kind of like overrides what another person's experience is. The other thing that I think is important about this specifically with twin flames, and I think we can kind of cross this over into different cult behaviors, like, for example, the multi-level marketing world, is that there's this like purchase of hope that they kind of like they live off of. So with twin flames specifically, buying into classes is purchasing the hope that you will be with the person that you want to be with. With multi-level marketing, the purchase of hope is rather like you are buying a better life for you and your family. I think in other cases where there's like monetary gain for the leaders of these types of cults, there's always a sort of buy-in, and that buy-in rests on a language that is like inherently aspirational, and it's less about anything like technical or real, for a lack of better word. So like they'll say like things like, you know, empowerment and like spirituality, and you're joining a family and there's like amazing opportunities, and it's not really about necessarily like an investment or employment, or like there's nothing grounding or real. It's all aspirational. And so that's sort of like that sort of faux inspo purchase of hope in an arena where it's not often, you can't buy your way into things, is something that can be really coercive to some people when you feel like you have no other options. So buying into having hope is your only option. When that is exploited, I think we have full cult behavior. And I actually think that can be applied to a lot of corporations, because a lot of the times what they are selling is this faux idea of hope. I joked about the Glossier girl thing, but now I'm just thinking like, you know, the language that around beauty products and this hope of being beautiful, which is seen as a way of being powerful in our economy. It's like this purchase of hope. Like, you buy this, you will have amazing eyelashes. Everyone will fall in love with you and you'll get your dream job.
Yep. That's like how it goes.
The purchase of hope is so sinister when, like, let's be real, hope is not really going to get you any further than anyone else. It's a good thing to have, like, don't get me wrong, but, like, that's not what's driving your success or your lack of success.
There are so many other factors at play which are obviously conveniently ignored. But also, yeah, you're right. It's this constant vague language of like synergy.
Oh, yes.
Self-actualization or vibrations, vibrations or paradigm shift.
Even a twin flame is a language of hope, because that assumes that you do have a definite person out there.
Yeah, you have a twin. Yeah. You have a romantic twin.
You have a soulmate.
Yeah. And this, the it's this lofty idea that is being sold to you. And sometimes people are desperate and they want to believe it. They want to believe it hard enough. And what's awful about this is how individualistic it is. I mean, we need a village around us to keep us afloat. And they really thrive on, again, making sure you cut your ties with everyone. It's all you. Even the mirror exercise, I mean, ironically and very conveniently, it's like really turning the lens on you, and it's like what you want and what you can do about it. And then it can also be this like self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not doing enough, I'm not working hard enough, and oh my god, that is bound to drive a person crazy.
Yeah, it's sort of, it ends discussion at any point. It's pretty silencing if at any point in a like workshop you could be told just to flip whatever you're feeling about the world onto yourself. Yeah. Like that ends whatever conversation could be coming. That ends having any questions about,
that ends having any thoughts.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, period.
You're not like a person at that point. Wow, this just got dark, friends. Should we take a quick break?
Yes.
Because I know you have a thought, and I can see that it's very interesting.
That's exactly what happened. So let's take a break.
Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Discover Noreen Braun's album, Songs for Trees, dedicated to the forests and the spirits within the trees. As we fight climate change, trees are the lungs of the planet and we need to help them. Her jazz and blues are blended with rock and synthesized pop elements to create a textured and ambient soundtrack to nature. Songs for Trees is a narrative, with each song guiding us through a journey through the forest. A trip, literally and metaphorically, about the interconnectedness of all things. The Vancouver Sun names it one of five albums you need to hear. Find out more at noreenbraun.com.
Hey, did you know UBC Acapella's winter concert is coming up?
The Fall All Acapella?
Yeah, all seven of UBC's acapella groups are going to be performing.
Nice. When's the show?
December 9th at Lord Binks Secondary School. Matinee is at 2:30 and evening concert is at 6.
Cool. Where can I buy tickets?
Using the show pass link on their Instagram, at UBC Acapella. It's $15 for students and $20 for adults.
Are you going?
Duh.
Can you buy an extra ticket for me?
Sure, why not?
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Word Goblins only on CADR 101.9 FM Vancouver while Tasha fixes her mic.
I'm sorry. I have no etiquette.
Radio happening in real time, am I right?
Wow, that's radio, baby.
Or just someone being clumsy.
The magic of live radio. That's what you came here for, just to hear like this.
Whoa.
Anyways.
ASMR.
Welcome back to our long-winded discussion about cults and fandoms and Gaslight Girl Boss, MLM, Glossier Girl Swifties.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things that we haven't directly mentioned because we've been talking about the Twin Flame universe and its coercive language.
That is correct. And I, while we were on break, I was telling Tasha how I am mad again because Twin Flames universe existed. How dare they? But also, it's the perfect scheme. The new age spirituality
for our time
is real, and people fall for it. And mm-hmm. it's often not what it seems like. It's always a scam.
It's true.
And I have another alliteration for you, by the way.
Okay.
So you've heard of Girl Boss, Gatekeep, Gaslight?
Yep.
The Girl other one, Keep,
Gate Boss.
No. Mansplain, Manipulate, Manslaughter. That's culty.
This is how you know if you're in a cult.
Yep.
Then we're going to break it down for you right
yep.
now.
Yep, absolutely. Those two things. Think about, like, are they gatekeeping?
Mm-hmm.
Are they giving you boss babe energy? And then are they gaslighting you? But also, is this person capable of manslaughter? Most likely, yes.
Yeah, the pipeline of mansplain to manslaughter.
And manipulate.
Yep.
Is too real.
Mansplaining is manipulating.
Yeah.
It's like, you know that everyone's automatically going to believe whatever you say.
Right.
And everyone has like a chorus of like little I don't knows in their head that all turn into like, yes, of course, this man exactly knows what he's talking about. The second a guy gets on his pedestal and starts talking about
something.
Looks
like Jesus. I can't doubt Jesus.
Who am I to doubt a man with long hair? Yeah. And also in all of these, the buy-in of hope. And I think mm-hmm. that sort of like hope aspirational language is kind of the sprinkle on top of all of these groups mm-hmm. is the idea that one can simply buy enough workshops or buy enough products to sell that they would be able to lift themselves out of whatever situation they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like being able to sell hope is so potent. I guess that's what religions are. I've been agnostic my whole life, so I'm like, I guess, but I can see it. I mean, hope is so powerful.
I have been known to be of faith, and I don't
feel
like...
I've been known to be of faith!
And I don't think I've fallen for a cult yet, so...
Okay, but here's the other thing, is like it gives you some sort of existential purpose, right? So there's like the buy-in of hope.
Sure.
And there's like the buy-in sometimes. Of feeling like your life has meaning or purpose beyond just endlessly floating in
I suppose.
Void.
I mean, cognitive dissonance is real, so I kind of do both.
True.
I'm like, sure, God exists, but also I feel existential dread.
I think that's a healthy thing to have.
I think you
got to have both.
Thank you.
Too much on one end of the spectrum. One is like you're susceptible to cults.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is like that's just sad. Like you can't live that way.
I'm just skeptical.
Yeah.
At all points of time.
I usually don't exist with a lot of hope in my heart. But I think that I need it. Mm-hmm. And I try to employ it.
However.
Systematically.
Absence of hope is also how you fall for cults.
That is true, because then you would imagine that someone could give it to you, you could purchase it from someone
mm-hmm.
that, yeah.
Or in the currency, if you think about it, I mean, it's all about social mobility, right?
Uh-huh.
And the currency could be anything. Sometimes it's like, if I show you enough devotion, give me your devotion. That's the currency. Give me your affection. Give me your attention. And also, if there is enough fervor
mm-hmm.
from this little weird community that I've carved, I can make all their problems go away, but that never happens, ever. If anything, you are further and further tangled into this quote-unquote cult, and you are also just very divorced from reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, the whole, like, cult speak, right, which is real, and you have read the book Cultish by Amanda Montel,
mm-hmm.
so good segue into that.
Great segue.
Something, mirror exercise, turns out it's not the cult couple of Twin Flames universe. They did not invent it, but they definitely popularized it. We have New Age wellness girlies who have their own sort of set of language that they use over and over. And you know, like, sure, like, all groups, all subcultures have their own set of codes and languages and lingo, which is fine. But when does it get sneaky?
Yeah, I think in-group language is another one of these big signifiers of what could possibly be a cult. What you may have a reason to call something a cult if you all have certain terms that you in the in-group know that maybe people outside wouldn't be able to apply it to the same things. I'm thinking specifically about something like CrossFit, and me talking about like a gain in my life is different than like gains in the CrossFit world. And that's like a pretty poor example, but there, like, this can scale up to something like Scientology, which is known for having this gibberish ass language that they're meant to all study and use. And it gets to the point where these become, I think you brought this up, thought terminating cliches, which is this way of just shutting down further discussion. You probably would have encountered it if someone, like, if you were having a discussion and someone just said, oh, let's agree to disagree. That's a pretty cheap example of it. It may be like, I'm just saying, or like, boys will be boys. Like, these things that sort of, like, stop discussion full, like, it's kind of like putting up a stop sign, essentially. It means that things can't be, you can't, like, issue dissent, you can't talk about nuance, it just ends there. And this language can do that in of itself. I think something like the mirror exercise just has terminology. Aside from what the practice is, someone bringing up, oh, like, maybe you should do the mirror exercise, is itself a thought terminating cliche, because in that community it means, oh, you haven't done the work.
And you so haven't done the work.
No matter what you're about to say, you haven't done the work. That stops the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. You have, I believe, one of the thought-terminating cliches, which is actually a phrase that was coined in the early 60s by a psychologist called Robert J. Lifton, and he describes it as a stock expression, that's easily memorized and repeated back to you, aimed at shutting down independent thinking. It's often so vague. And again, cliched, right? I think it's sneaky in the sense it's ubiquitous, but also if you repeat it enough, it starts making sense. And so you haven't done the work, which we hear all the time with like therapy speak with. And it's like, yeah, in some senses, it's true. Maybe some people need to be more self-aware. But then if that's kind of the only answer we're offering to folks, it's very dismissive of their actual valid concerns. I'm seeing, I recall from Twin Flames Universe, there was something that Jeff, the cult leader, used to say to people coming to him with critique or valid questions would be like, I am noticing healing block.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, you're at fault. Maybe go back and think again, aka like, oh, don't think, or things like limiting beliefs. Some things we talked about earlier as well with like influencer lingo, paradigm and synergy and all of that. It's like, what do those things even mean? Like, who knows?
Yeah, they're both aspirational and kind of a shutdown. It's language that's meant to silence dissent.
Yeah, like, it's so fluff. It's like, what does it even mean? And then you are afraid to even ask because everybody, because then it's almost like, oh, I don't want to get kicked out of this in-group. Like, I know what that synergy means. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's very true. It's sort of like it's gaslighting adjacent. Because it stops you from having any thoughts, any questions. It is what you said, like, don't think, just like continue to like absorb like a sponge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't ask questions.
No. Trust the process. How
dare
you?
Trust the process.
Yeah.
That one is a good one.
Something from the book that is really interesting from Cultish is the how Cultish language, in-group languages in these sinister groups, they try to do three things, and Amanda Montell calls them the three C's. And so those are converting you, conditioning you, and coercing you.
Mm-hmm.
And those are done by, again, a lot of different means, but language plays such a huge part.
Yeah, I think language in all three of those C's is pretty prescient. It's it's a good way to condition someone to not think.
Yeah.
It's coercive.
And the charisma, right? The danger of charisma of the leader.
The charisma element usually is like if there are really big, complex words that are essentially gibberish, words that will kind of hold someone up,
make mirror them exercise. Seem,
the mirror exercise, things that stop you from being able to question.
Yeah.
A lot of this comes down to the language that is used, because sort of like what we mentioned before, like brainwashing is a metaphor. You can't literally brainwash anyone. However, you can talk to them in a way that is sort of manipulative, that kind of holds yourself up and holds whatever they were thinking down.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that we see in a lot of cults.
Yeah.
You can use it to talk about almost any modern group, which I think is why we see the word cult popping up a lot, because...
Definitely. I'm also thinking, and yes, cults at some point or the other get dangerous and abusive and exploitative, but initially they start all soft and fluffy, and love bombing is such a big one, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, someone is actually believing in me. That's so nice. And yeah. So that's I think for me, the chorus part is very much like, how do you prey on this person, and how do you, it's really the kind of dangling piece of candy in front of the person.
Yeah, that's the hope element.
Yeah,
that's the thing that they're giving you if you were to buy in.
Yep, that's
which
it.
Is kind of funny, because the way I see it is like it is all about this idea of hope joining something like Twin Flames, but it feels pretty hopeless to have to turn every argument onto yourself.
Yeah.
So that feels like a lot more work, whereas hope is just something that you can kind of like believe in, that motivates you, that carries you forward to do the good work.
Yeah, no, because ultimately I think because Twin Flames has been our example today, there were so many contradictions and there were so many loopholes and gaps and fractures within the Twin Flames universe. The leaders couldn't keep their arguments straight, and they knew it. They knew they were full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then because you have, again, brainwashed people to such a degree, and they're going to be so afraid and terrified to question you on it, that you can really just say anything and get away with it. Because it's not supposed to make sense.
No. It's supposed to be faux-spirational. It's just like, oh, sir, you're thinking with your head and not with your heart. Like, what does that even mean?
You can think with your heart.
No, you can't. I mean, I'm not a biologist, but I don't think so. I don't think it comes from there.
And if I say, dare I say that, wow, you have a really small heart then. How are you going to find your twin flame? Oops.
I particularly want to zero in on this like meritocracy approach, this idea that
American dream.
Yeah, that the American dream, which has been so pervasive for so long, which is probably why we're at this moment with a lot of these groups where it's just like you have to believe in order to unlock your potential.
It's not a game.
It's not a game, and it's not easy, and it's not about simple optimism. Like, do you remember the game? Not the game. What is it called? The Secret? Sorry, there's a lot of very singular... The Game is a pickup artist book, so that was the wrong reference.
Yes, I remember The Secret. Who doesn't?
And The Secret's whole thing was if you were to believe...
Manifest
and, like, have supreme optimism, you will attract good things in your life, is once again this sort of like cultish behavior of imagining that like one just has to work hard enough believe hard enough or be optimistic enough for the thing that they want to happen. It puts all the power in your hands and it completely ignores any sort of like systemic pressures around a person, almost pretending that the rest of the world doesn't exist and it's just the individual.
That's
which is so incorrect, and it's so selfish, and it's so individualistic.
So myopic.
Yeah.
It's almost like we don't live in a society.
Yeah, according to
wake up, grow up,
this sort of ethos, it is like we don't live in a society. Yeah. It's just you.
It's just you. And that's really scary.
Yeah. There's this whole inspiration board of like MLM quotes that like fit perfectly into this ethos that is just like, oh, the pessimist sees difficulty in every opportunity. Which, like, directly relating that to you spending money on a kit that you can't sell because you're the people that are looking after you are taking money from your sales, making it seem as if you are just being pessimistic.
Yeah. And, yeah, they are going to completely bulldoze over any kind of barriers, oppressions, disabilities, class struggle. And it's like, you're not trying hard enough. You're not believing hard enough. And then you're just stuck in this cycle and there's just no way out of it because that's not how it works.
Yeah. I just think that there are a lot of these emotionally manipulative platitudes that we see. And they're really present in these cults. They're really present in MLMs. They're really present in Twin Flames. They're also sometimes present on apps like Instagram that every now and then you'll just see those like blank word posts that, you know, cool font that just say something really blasé that was like, it's kind of manipulative because it kind of puts you in this driver's seat that you're not always in. And we're bombarded with these kinds of, like, axioms all the time.
Yeah. It is what it is.
It is. I'm just saying.
My favorite post from Agree to Disagree, there was just a meme where this person says, agree to disagree, I guess. And then the other person is like, yeah, bitch, about pizza toppings, not about genocide.
Exactly.
So, okay, we are over time, actually.
Oh,
so
wow.
We'll have to say our goodbyes.
All right. Well, that about wraps it. I have nothing else to say. I had no thoughts, head empty.
Yo, perfect timing. Okay, take care. And hopefully we have another episode for y'all.
Yeah. Take care out there.